JockX Podcast, episode 45. My name is James O'Connor, your host, and this is where I deconstruct the habits, the rituals, the tips and principles that these guests live by to get their amazing results that they got. And us as listeners can really take away things and apply it to our own games, to our own lives, and take us to the next level and really chase our dreams that bit better, that bit harder. And today's guest, I'm super excited to have David Butterfant on the show. Now, David is just a superhuman being, I must say first. And we had a super conversation at the back of an actual pub there in Ivanhoe near Melbourne, which was kind of fun. So there is a little bit of background noise, but it was a super conversation. It could have gone for hours, but we went for around the 60-minute mark, and there is some amazing content in there for you guys to really help you take your game to the next level. And David's background is he started off basically with North Melbourne as a high performance advisor, sort of part-time, and then went to full-time. He did a stint with the Olympic team, Sydney Olympic Australian swim team. And obviously those guys had a major success at Sydney Olympics back in year 2000. From there, he went to Collingwood Football Club, where he formed an incredible partnership with the coach, then coach Mick Malthouse, for the following, I think, 11 seasons, where they competed in four grand finals, along with a premiership in 2010, and had a huge amount of success. And David was really pioneer in a lot of different high performance aspects of football here in Australia, along with one of them being altitude training, and always continually pushing the envelope to find the edge for his team to take him to the next level. And as Dane Swan pointed out, he was like the 23rd man on the field. He just gave those guys that edge, and for a long period there, they were super successful and the best team going around here in Australia. So super to have him on the show. He has just finished up with Carlton, where he spent a couple of seasons again with Mick, and now he's running his own company alongside Mick as well. They're partnered up with a leadership and high performance company, doing some incredible work there. So we chat all those things. We chat some amazing content, and I think you guys are going to sit back, whether you're in your car listening to this, whether you're at the gym, going for a walk, you know, doing the dishes, whatever it is. David has so much to share for you, whether you're in business, whether you're in sport, whether you're studying, or just overall want to take your life and well-being to the next level. He is the man, and I was really grateful to have him on the show, and I think you guys are going to absolutely enjoy this. So thank you. Big shout out to the people out there who share this on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all those good places. Also, if you can subscribe on iTunes to the podcast and give us a review, that really helps out. Rating and review, 5 stars, really gets us some amazing guests like David and continually them coming and sharing their knowledge. So that really helps us out here, guys. So thank you to you guys. Super that you're here. So how about we shall get stuck into this conversation with myself, James O'Connor, and guest David Butterfant. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you, James. Good to be here.
Absolutely. So we're sitting at the back of actually a pub, would you believe?
Very relaxing.
It is quite relaxing. So it's a beautiful day, and I want to thank you for coming on and giving some of your time.
No worries at all. Good to be here.
Fantastic. So I'd love to sort of start off a bit with actually your sort of currently what you're doing now and sort of what you've done over the last sort of 12 months in particular.
I had been working at Carlton Football Club for the last 2 years as a high performance manager, and I've just embarked on forming a company with Michael Malthouse, and it's called Keen Edge, and we're running leadership programs for middle to senior managers, and we run these one-day workshops, and then from there we do these kind of three-day kind of adventure programs, helping people become better and develop their leadership skills and communication and so on.
Yeah, for sure. Is that basically here in Melbourne, or do you travel?
We do travel. We have some companies that are nation. They're spread all over the country, and obviously depending on what they're after, but we tailor the program to meet their needs. And things we work on, basic things like communication, resilience is a big one, and well-being. Particularly a lot of these middle of the senior managers are under a lot of stress, yeah. And because both of us have been in the industry for a long time, then we can kind of impart some of our experiences, and then also we facilitate a pathway that helps pretty much about their, you know, high performance model and increase their productivity.
Yeah, for sure. And prior to pressing record, we did talk a lot about sort of well-being. We'll definitely onto that. Yep. But tell me, what's involved in the 3-day sort of experience, I
guess?
Well,
yeah, it's pretty. We've done this for quite a while. We've done a lot of camps with AFL footballers over the last 15 or so years, and some of the camps we've done have been in altitude training, and it's not just a physiological response that we're looking for. It's more of a psychological kind of experience as well. So it's pretty much about extending people, getting them to become more self-aware, and when people are a little bit vulnerable, that's when you can start to really kind of push the the limits a bit. So for example, we do one in Victoria. You might take them to Mount Buller or Falls Creek, and you do a bit of hiking and you do some kind of team bonding activities, and we do a little bit of workshopping as well around kind of case studies and so forth. We do assessment on them too, and that's pretty much, and over 3 days, but you have various activities, and depending on their fitness levels and what they can achieve, sometimes we can push them. We're taking groups into caving, and which have been really really challenging. There's a train, we've done some abseiling, rock climbing, mountain bike ride, kayaking, whitewater rafting, stuff like that. And really, what happens when you take people into an unknown environment and where it's a little bit challenging, particularly with a group, it can galvanize a group. But also too, you really have to kind of, once you're vulnerable, you start to really kind of understand where your constraints are as well, and you don't have the distractions from the workplace too. So you really, it's a different environment, so you can really start to have impact and on making change. And then from that, we do a follow-up, because we're looking at behavioural changes, changing, helping them to kind of become aware, but also creating and facilitating a pathway to develop their kind of skills and expertise too.
Yeah, for sure. And it just makes me think, you talk about the part where you get the sort of the clients to that point of where they're exhausted, or their resistance is lower. It's a bit, reminds me of that Vince Lombardi saying, basically, the fatigue makes cowards of us all.
It does. It happens to all of us. When you're lacking sleep, your energy levels are low, you go from Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde very quickly. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And particularly within a group, people start to see that, and they see their vulnerabilities. But also too, they can actually help one another as well. And I've seen that particularly in a lot of elite athletes, when we take them to some challenging training environments where they have to work as a team, and they're pushing, to achieve that kind of outcome. So it does actually transfer, back to performance. It resonates for a while, but they need that follow on, for those behavioural shifts to kind of become more kind of locked in.
Yeah, for sure. Sort of like over maintenance, a bit of
coaching.
Coaching, exactly. Yeah, seeing what's working, what's not, and
definitely
making those necessary, adjustments, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
But it's interesting. It actually springs to mind a story. I was actually reading your book, and I didn't quite finish it. I was trying to get through it this week, and as you can imagine, every guest I'm trying to get through their books. But
falling asleep, were you?
No, great book. Loved it. No, definitely recommend listeners get a hold of it. We'll talk about it in a minute. But this particular story was the one you were on Phillip Island, and I think it was about a 12-hour day you spent out with the Collingwood boys there. And it did make me. It's an interesting situation you have when I just imagine that you're walking back and everyone's exhausted and. And it didn't go well. We all survived, the main thing. But.
Yeah, we did. And you've got to do a pretty thorough risk management kind of strategy in place. And that day, we planned to do it in 7 or 8 hours, and it would have taken us 12 or 13 hours in a 35, 37 degrees Celsius day. And they were pushed to the limit, and these were our leaders, and we had on this day, and they were just towards the end, they were at each other, and but we got through, and it was talked about for a long time, and it was a lot of leaders were developed on that day, and they still talk about it.
Well, it's funny those moments when you do those challenges that are just so extreme beyond what you thought you were capable of.
Yes,
that's even just bringing a story, like my own little personal story, when we were about 15, 16, a couple of mates who sort of marked out a run out in Mallacoota, out in the in the forest. Anyway. I remember the night before, we're like, as long as it's not, beyond 30K or something, we'll be okay. And this is the time, my biggest run was about 15. And then anyway, about 35K, 3 hours later, like it was, and it's a story we've talked about for you know, 10 years or more, 15 years. And
legend status, is it?
Yeah, well, it's more, and for the point, there's, I guess, those moments when you're in your toughest moments, those, you know, your hardest hours, that's the moment you sort of really remember.
Yes.
And it definitely unlocks a different sort of a very companionship with the guys you're with at the time as well.
No doubt, James. I think that's one of the things is when you get through that and you kind of question yourself, you know, are we going to achieve this? And you start to really have that doubt. But once you do achieve that, you know, you kind of, it can have a real galvanizing effect. And I remember one year we were climbing Humphreys Peak in Arizona, and this is in Flagstaff, and we, you know, it's nearly getting to 4,000 meters, and Nick Maxwell was with a group, it was about probably 10 of us, we were the first group to lead off, had some corporates. And at some stages we were hip height in snow, you know, and a few of the boys were saying, look, we're not gonna make this. And you start to hear a little voice in the back of your head, We're not going to make it. But before, we're just little step by little step. And eventually we said, well, let's get to the next, you know, to the next ridge and see if we can kind of have a rest and we get regroup again. And we eventually made the top. And it was purely just the momentum of the players and the people around. We just kept going. And then we eventually got there. So it was just little steps. And I think what it does do, it does galvanize a group when you do something. It doesn't need to be that over the top. That doesn't mean like climbing Everest or anything like that at all. But doing something as a group together, it definitely can bring a group very close.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you just see it time and time again. That's, you know, yeah, for sure. I sort of want to touch your time, Matt, sort of when you came across from, you're at North Melbourne and then you went across to Collingwood. And we were discussing before, you saw the transition in AFL, obviously, from really going sort of semi-professional to full-time professional having the resources.
Yeah.
Talking about the sort of things you saw, you know, back in North Melbourne days and then coming into Collingwood, what you really led.
Yeah, look, and I think, I mean, it was a real credit to North Melbourne because, you know, they were poor as church mice, and, you know, but for the success they had, they were just
seven
amazing.
Prelims in a row.
Yeah, and, you know, Dennis, you know, he ran a really tight ship, and the players themselves were highly competitive and really close. They were a very close group and highly, you know, so... But the resources were limited, really limited, you know, from staff and technology and so forth. So you know, getting to Collingwood, we were a big club. And I think, you know, post-2000, after the Olympics, technology was on the move, you know. So they realised, well, okay, we had to utilise sports science technology to provide, you know, an advantage. So the AFL were kind of leading the way on, you know, embracing a lot of technology. And we saw a lot of shifts, in particularly in the early 2000s, you know, when GPS started to come in. Yep. And then blood monitoring and so forth. So I think what happened was that there was a, you know, an exponential kind of growth in sports science technology. Mm. But I do think the culture is, you know, is fundamentally the most important part of a team's success. Yep. And North Melbourne had a wonderful culture, and you know, that's why they probably played in so many kind of premier finals. But the technology provides an advantage, but it's actual culture itself. And then once you start developing that culture and the high performance model, then you can actually have success. And Collingwood got that, you know, 2002, 2003, they missed out, unfortunately, then bottomed out and they rebuilt again.
Yeah, for sure. So over your 13 years with Collingwood.
Yes.
And I guess you saw a whole range of players. Is there any particular players that just sort of stood out for you in terms of one sort of, you know, really living out the culture as the club sort of really wanted them to, and two, just really sort of blew away with how, you know, I guess good they were and what they could do on the field.
Well, there's so many players, and I've always been mindful not, you know, never to really highlight any individual because it is a team sport, you know, and they're all different. And some players have only played 20 games, but they've had a big influence towards the actual success. And sometimes it's players that aren't really well recognised, but they're recognised within the actual organisation, you know. So no, I can't really identify anyone specifically, and I'm very mindful of not doing that as well. You know, so I think there's been some wonderful leaders at the club, you know, and been their competitiveness, their inclusiveness has been really important. And other players who haven't been given a title of leadership have been wonderful as well, you know, and that makes a club, you know, makes a club successful too. And I think that legacy still holds in that club today.
Yeah, for sure. And we just touched on briefly. I'd love to go back to sort of well-being, and we just sort of talked about that at club level now today. But just in general, talking about the importance of looking after your whole overall well-being through, you know, your nutrition, through your exercise, sleep.
Yeah.
Talk to me how important that is today, and I guess the great understanding people are getting now.
Look, I think it's, and you know, as far as society, we're starting to realise the importance of well-being. And there's a holistic approach that we need to take, and that's from a physical, mental and a social side of things. And they're all connected, and I think that it's really important having a healthy body but a happy mind, I think that's, and then, dealing with the athletes or anyone really, that once we get those things right, from relationships, having connectedness to, community and to your friends and family, it's really important. But from a healthy body perspective, obviously activity, sleep, nutrition is really important. And then from the mental side of things, dealing with your mood, your attitudes, empathy, those things are really important in our life. And I think it's things we have to work on regularly. We have to be coached how to do that and do that well. This is something that starts from a young age, and schools are doing that quite well. From primary school, they're starting to work on wellbeing. It's not just looking at the academic kind of syllabus. This is a very important part of the syllabus, I believe, that puts people, in good stead in the future, because it's about resilience. If we have, really solid and sound kind of areas that are developing wellbeing, it gives us resilience. When we're confronted with adversity, I believe that we can buffer that. Yeah. If we've got some really good, strong wellbeing habits. We know about the undesirable habits, but if we keep kind of working on desirable habits, that will put us in good stead when adversity does approach us.
Yeah, and when you think about exactly, like, if you don't look up, even just go back to health, and if you don't look after your health in general, say, when it comes to looking after other people or looking after your business or whatever it is, you can't do it if you haven't got your health to start with. So it's sort of the key building block on everything else. And to have a great relationship with friends or people close to you, like, it's, if you don't have that, then those things are all going to suffer. It's just going to filter down in a very negative way.
Oh, that's so true. It's a bit of a paradox, that life-work balance, because at the elite level, and when you're working and striving so hard to get to that pinnacle of success, something along the way is giving, that it's fragmenting, whether it's your health or whether it's your relationships, family, whatever it may be. And it's getting that right, and whether you're an elite athlete or whether you're a CEO or position of leadership, it doesn't matter, anyone really, at some stage, you've got to get that balance right. If not, it's gonna get you somewhere, So really, it's, you become sick or run down, and productivity is the thing that will start to drop. Yeah. And it's spot on. I think it's one of those things that it is a fine line. High performance, we push and push and push, but something will happen, and we may see fragmentation occur at that period where we don't want it.
Oh, well, I think, I don't know if I'm just in the space, but I think in general society is getting a hold of more of this. And some of the key people I had on this show, I think episode 29 was James Shramko, a guy from Sydney. And he's gone hugely successful online. Like, he's making really good finance numbers and those type of things. But, like, he talks about how he made an adjustment back from working, 18-hour days to coming back to getting his sleep, getting his nutrition, took up surfing. He has a nap in the afternoon, those type of things. And he's really a big advocate now. He coaches hundreds of people around the world now on this. Yes. And I think there is a big shift happening, because people realise when you get to, 70, you want to be still really fit and healthy, and you don't want to be stuck at home and can't go out and live your life. So.
No, it's compound interest, isn't it, really? Yeah. It's what if you actually start to nurture those areas, you start to develop those traits as well. The more you do of the undesirable traits, that will have a negative effect towards, the body and the mind. So we have to work at that, and it takes discipline. It's real discipline. It's self-regulating in a positive way. So self-management, self-awareness. It's not something like a light switch. Oh, yeah, I can just turn and I can do this. It's hard work. But to be, like I said, we've seen senior coaches get sick. We see CEOs get sick. You've got to be fit. You've got to be physically fit and mentally fit to be able to do that and do it well regularly. Because if you're not, then performance will drop off. It's one of the things that that Mick Malthouse talks about. He's been in business for 30 years, dealing with boards, dealing with media, and so on. He's physically and mentally fit, and it takes, I suppose, a discipline. There's also a constitution in your life as well. But the thing is, we can change. If we have passion and we're all malleable, we can change in a positive manner.
Yeah, and I think it's not only if you're 10 years old and you're in school, but I think also whether you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, you can still make those changes now and make massive difference, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Because, because when what happens is we... we start to actually deal with stress in a negative way, and we pick up undesirable habits. Mm. You know, so it's picking up the desirable habits that's going to have an influence and help us restore and recover. And that takes a little bit of discipline and self-regulation. But it's something which I'm happy to talk about. I've got a passion about this area too. But it's great to see a lot of workplaces are obviously taking this on board now and addressing to their employees that to make it more positive and productive and addressing well-being.
So if you had some advice, people listening now, and they're like, okay, I'm going to make some more changes in my life to improve my overall well-being. What sort of strategies would you put in place to make not only the change but sort of maintain it and keep going with those new habits?
Yeah, well, one of the first things that I've done with a lot of elite athletes is, we can identify our constraints and we've got strengths as well. So self-awareness is really important. Don't focus on your undesirable habits. Try to use a desirable habit in your life. You know, it might mean, okay, that you walk 15 minutes after dinner. Do something that is achievable that you can do. That it's not, it's not too significant to your lifestyle, but it's something you can add to your lifestyle in a positive way. So don't focus on undesirables, focus on a desirable habit that's gonna help your relationships from a social point of view, from a physical point of view, or from a mental point of view. And then once you've done that, it becomes automated in your life, then bring another one in, and then bring another one in. And before you know it, you've added six positive strategies that's gonna help your overall well-being.
Mm. What type of strategies or habits would you recommend listeners to start to look into, start to invest their time in regards, like, I know we're covering a lot here, but just a few things that maybe you do on a daily basis that really you think gain the most benefit from?
I think one of the things, eating is really important. I think having consistency in our eating well. But one of the ones I've noticed is, and I've mentioned to a lot of players, they're usually ravenous after training for so long, and the calories they consume are way too high. It's about slowing down. Sit down at a consistent time of the day. Put your knife and fork down while you're chewing. You'll notice that your time will be a lot longer, that's what you want to do. You don't want to digest your food or eat your food within 8 minutes. You want to take your 20 minutes. So put your knife and fork down while you're chewing. That is a really basic tip, particularly in decreasing the volume of food that you take in. But find a consistent time of eating. Avoid times where you become really ravenous. Look, there's eating, there's sleep, there's exercise, there's mental, there's a whole host of things. I could talk for 3 hours on what I eat with you, and I'd love to do it, but yeah. Obviously that would be one basic tip that I would give to people. Because really a lot of the times we don't get the eating right. We get the training right, but we don't get the eating right.
It's interesting. I was just mentioned to you before a podcast by Rich Roll, who's a guy I follow heavily. He's in the States and ultra athlete, and he's one of the, I think, leaders in this sort of space of diet and so forth. But he had a guest on named David Carter, who's also a vegan, and he actually plays NFL football over there.
Oh, yes.
And it was just interesting because you can imagine he's a linebacker. He's raised 300 pounds, so 150 odd kilos for us Australians. But he, the talk with David, the NFL player, was mentioning with football and diet, because obviously a lot of those NFL, they go to the pre-game and there's this chicken and there's all this crazy amounts of food, as you can imagine. Yes. Like, they're all sponsored by all the different big chains and so forth. But the average age, and there's a few things involved with this, but the average length or lifespan for football is like 57 years or something.
Yeah, that's right. For an offensive lineman who's over 330 pounds.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and sad, isn't it?
And that's why David, he's sort of being a sort of pioneer, I guess, in that space. He's the only guy, being a vegan, obviously, he's achieving the performance parameters, I guess, in a way.
Yes.
But hopefully, extends 10, 20, 30 years onto his life, which is
good on him.
Invaluable. And I just thought the importance of diet is just so critical, even if whatever sport you're doing, whatever needs to happen. So.
And it's balanced. It is really balanced. And I think the thing is, you're entitled to enjoy some foods. And I think the thing is that, but it's all in moderation. If we don't get that balance right, we lose that equilibrium. Then that's when we get affected. And I think, diet, we've got to stay away from certain foods. But it's okay. It's in moderation. It is in moderation. So I think and we don't get that right, the balance. So I think once we get the balance, and we can achieve that balance with our eating habits and the type of foods, and then we can maintain that kind of homesteading kind of state, and that's what we want. Our body needs it. If it doesn't, if it gets too much of something that's unhealthy, well then it's going to affect that our well-being.
Yeah. I'd love to go back to teams, David, just high-performing teams in your space and your business involved in.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier culture is probably one of the key ingredients to making a great team, which I totally believe as well.
Yes.
Talk to me about creating a great culture and some of the things that you implemented along with obviously Mick and that at Collingwood, at Carlton, to really, you know, achieve that level of success, and then what you're doing now obviously in business as well. And
yeah, that's, and we hear, you know, what a great culture is, and it's and who drives that culture, how does it happen? I mean, there is, you know, my belief is that when you do have that great culture, there is that kind of collaboration, there is that sense of kind of you feel included, you feel valued, you know, and I think there is a real kind of belief. There is a kind of collective belief there. And I suppose what happens is in any kind of dynamic environment, you can have egos, but sometimes the egos are kind of pushed aside when the culture is working really well. How do you create that? Well, I think it's good communication. I think feeling included, I think that's really important. Having good self-awareness. I think knowing your role, I think that you need clarity. I think what's really important is people need to understand the role. One of our football managers at Collingwood, Jeff Walsh, who's at North Melbourne, you know, in one of the sayings used to say, and I think it was quite profound, let the baker bake the bread. And I think that's so true. You know, I think that if everyone understands their role, then there's clarity. I think that's really important. And something that has to be worked on regularly. You know, this is really important. Relationships, it comes down to trust and having good relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you need to have some fun in the environment as well. So people come motivated to work.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not being valued, it's difficult. You know, it's difficult.
Mm.
And it's easy to have a good culture when you're winning.
Yeah.
It is easy. It is easy, you know. But it's when you're up against it, that's when you got to work hard. You got to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. Because you know there can be a lot of rhetoric. You know, you got to think, well, what are your values? Are you living by those values?
Yeah.
That is really important. I think that you got to walk the walk, and you know, and your leaders need to walk the walk. That is crucial.
And then it sort of comes back to obviously with that real key feedback you're getting from your peers, from your coaching staff as a player, or even as the coaching staff themselves getting reviewed. It's, you know, important to get that update and becoming aware of how others are sort of seeing them and how they're playing their role within the team.
Yeah, that's a good point, James. I think it is the feedback. We all need feedback. We need to see how we're actually progressing.
Yeah.
And it's reciprocal, you know. I think that's communication, that's relationships.
Yep.
You know, and sometimes you need to be candid. You know, this is high performance, you know. Yep. It's we're in the business, you know, the charter is to win premiership, is to win.
Yep.
You know, so sometimes you need to confront.
Yep.
But it's never personal. This is about getting better, and a lot of people working in that environment are helping you to get better, and even know that at times it may feel like, you know, you're being extended here, and it may feel a little bit uncomfortable. But it is about everyone getting better.
Well, you don't want yes men around you. You don't want people saying you're the man every time when you're not really being the man.
No.
To an extent, and it actually comes to mind. Like I sort of followed the UFC as well, and just watching the feedback after Ronda Rousey got knocked out, you know, massively in Melbourne, and they were talking a lot about she might have a few too many yes men behind her and saying you're still the best in the world sort of stuff, and made me think how important it is to have those people who do you trust, who challenge you, who make you look at the world differently, because ultimately we're all just looking through the lens of the world, and the reality is completely different between mine and yours. And
that is a really good point, and I think it comes down to integrity, you know, and I think that you need to hold your ground, and when it's time to say something, when you're seeing something that's wrong, it's time to hold your ground, because, you know, but when we're talking big salaries, you know, we're talking about you got to get your KPIs, and well, you're not compromising yourself. There is a time to say it and deliver it, you know, and I think that's, and it's our responsibility, you know, particularly if you're a leader in that environment, you've got, really, you don't have to be a leader. If you see something that's wrong, you need to address it. That's my take on it, and I think, but, you know, and it's easy to become a yes man. Well, it takes more energy to say no than to say yes. You know, it's hard work. Mm. It's hard work to be positive and to challenge people. But you know what? It's easy. You can conserve energy by being a yes man and just go along with it.
Yeah, exactly right. And And it is easy to just be a yes person. And just actually just sort of different example, but a sort of friend was having the other day, it was just even back to school teaching, and I believe you have your degree in there, but when you think about it, like, for them to give a bad report to a student, in a way, like, if they give a bad report, it's going to cause a lot of grief with their parents coming and asking what's going on. Sort of stuff, and then it just sort of makes you realise that in a lot of cases you are incentivised just to be a yes person, but the courage it needs and the honesty you have to adopt with those situations is so important, because the outcome is, you know, great team or just a moderate team.
And it's how it's delivered as well. I mean, sometimes it doesn't always have to be negative. You know, it's that open kind of discussion and feedback.
Yep.
You know, I think the thing is that, and each person is different as well. It's how you actually provide that feedback. You know, some people can be, you can tell them straight on, you know, this is where one of your limitations may be.
Yep.
But the other way, you may be a bit more kind of sensitive and more delicate in approaching, you know, that individual. So everyone is different, and it's how you deliver it as well. I think the key is how you facilitate it, really. Yeah. That's the key. And really, if you can get the person to articulate it themselves, that's even better.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just like anything, just like working a new muscle. After a while, I get stronger of getting used to what that feedback. First time, it might be, you know, you're shaking the boots a bit, what are they going to say about me? But once you've adopted it, and say you're in a business and you're just coming back every 3 months and doing reviews and what worked, what didn't work, it just becomes commonplace.
It's having that clarity, understanding, well, this is what's going to happen, this is what it's about, this is what we're doing, this is their brief. People need to, they like to know, you know, this is the process we're going through.
Yep. Because when you think about it, in, you know, 10, 20 years, when you're having a beer or having a coffee and talking about what you did in the past, whether it be football, even a business or whatever, you're going to really want to know that you got the right information at the time and made the best possible decisions.
Yes.
I ultimately think, and yes, it might be a tough conversation, even if you're working with friends or whatever it is. I think ultimately everyone's striving to really, especially in the high performance area, you want to be the best.
Well, that's right. And all you can do is do your best. And sometimes you make the wrong decisions. That's what happens. But basically, on the principles you're applying, you're doing it what you believe is best, you know, to help the team.
Yeah.
And that's what you're trying to drive, you know. And sometimes you get it wrong, but eventually you start to refine, and you get the methodology right, and then you get that kind of model happening. That's quite productive, and it works well.
I really liked Jeff Walsh, as you mentioned, with, you know, let the baker bake the cake. It's so important. I think in business too, it's absolutely integral. Knowing your, even as a business owner, knowing your strengths and what you're really good at, and the ability to delegate, ability, you know, whether you're using virtual assistants offshore or whether you're just using people in your office.
Yeah.
It's key, because, you know, you can maximize, if someone can do the same task for you for, you know, for $20 an hour or something, you know, why would you do that when, you know, you could go do a keynote speech for X amount, you know what I mean? And it's the same principle applies, doesn't it, across the board?
No, you're spot on. And that's what happens. And sometimes when you take them out into a vulnerable kind of environment like a three-day camp, you see people being extended. But what happens, you develop that trust and relationship, and you think, well, that person's not going to judge me. That's who I am.
Yeah.
I've got strengths here. I've got weaknesses here. Mm. And you start working around that. And then what you do is you prop them up when you need to prop them up.
Yep.
You know, so it's a pretty easy formula, really, to follow. You know, and we all have constraints. So self-awareness is crucial.
Yeah.
You know, and there, you know, I think that assessment is vital. And then going forward, and once that's kind of shown to other people, people will work with you. No, they'll help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully.
Well, I totally agree with you. Self-awareness is just so key and so vital to your performance, I think, in a whole range of aspects of your life. And if that's something that, you know, listeners could take away just alone, just the ability to realise, okay, I'm going to probably be more aware of what I'm doing and the habits I have, the way I operate in this world. It's a key principle.
Yeah, of course, and I think that's because we're malleable. We can change. If we really want to change, we can change. Particularly if you're accepting feedback, you know, that's where coaches can, you know, help people develop their strengths, but also hone on some of their constraints as well. And, you know, and that's where how athletes become better over time. And you need time as an athlete, but once you start to really refine some of those kind of deficiencies you have, you can become a very good athlete. And I've seen a lot of athletes, you know, that they've come into the system with quite a few deficiencies, but before we know it, they're an All-Australian, they're a premiership player. I think, gee, How hasn't that athlete evolved? Because they've had the right resources, they've identified where their weaknesses are, and then they've addressed them.
Yeah, and there's some more classic examples, I guess, through your days with Collingwood in particular. I think Nick Maxwell would have to be one.
Oh, I did. Great
coming
example.
Through, and he, you know, a magnificent leader for your club for a number of years there. And
As a rookie, sorry for interrupting, James, but as a rookie, and then, you know, becoming an All-Australian, becoming a captain and a wonderful leader. But he had that intrinsic motivation to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that whether he was at another club, I'm sure he would have, you know, succeeded. The vagaries of, you know, of chance and, you know, and sport, and things got to go your right way. But he had this inner belief and this strength and resolve to really get into that next level. But you know, when he first came on board, I thought, well, this guy, I don't know where he's going to play league footy. A lot of people were probably asking that, but I bet he wasn't.
Yeah,
yeah, strong belief he was going to make it.
Talk about your experience and sort of what made, I guess, you know, really become successful in this area. Coming through the 90s when you started working with North Melbourne, what are sort of key principles that you were living by at that particular point that got you on the cutting edge of it all and got you into such great positions like with Collingwood, Carlton and obviously North Melbourne prior?
I think I was fortunate to have, you know, been involved in a successful organisation. I've always been very inquisitive to keep, you know, kind of extending myself and, you know, trying to find out, keeping abreast of new innovations and technologies and training. I always loved sport. You know, just had a passion for sport, even, you know, since 5 years of age. You know, so it's one of those things. It's not difficult to read and research and be involved in sport. So you had this thirst, but also too, I've had a real thirst to help people develop. You know, for some reason, that's kind of like whether it's intrinsically in me to help coach people and develop people. That's something that I've always had. And then what happens when you have that passion, you start to really work on solutions. This is a pathway that's going to help that person. And sometimes you get it wrong, and sometimes you get it right. And that's the biggest challenge. You know, you use scientific evidence, you know, use the empirical evidence to support you, but also too, there's an art as well in developing that kind of that pathway.
With the sort of innovations you brought into football, altitude training being one of them.
Yes.
What was the sort of key process? I'm just trying to break down your process and how you come up with these ideas. Obviously, it was massive through athletics, particular distance running.
Yes.
Was that the sort of way you just sort of looked at other sports? Or what's the process did you use to come up with these new ideas for the club?
It was interesting because, you know, I had the experience to go away for a month to Arizona with the Australian swimmers just prior to Sydney Olympics. And look, I was a little bit sceptical about it, but I saw the actual positive effects that it had on our Australian swimmers, particularly in 2000 in Sydney and doing so well in medals and experience it firsthand.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, looking at other sports as well, using altitude training, I thought, look, you know, we know that has benefits on, you know, like cyclists and endurance runners, but we didn't really know a lot about team sports. And I thought, well, this is an opportunity for us, one, to bring the group close together. You know, we knew that we can get some benefits from a physiological point of view, increasing red blood cells. So we thought, look, why don't we do that? Take them into an environment where they're, from a social point of view, they come together closely.
Yep.
It's a challenging environment, as you know, with altitude, but also we get some benefits as well. And then we can go into the pre-season doing some more technical and tactical stuff where we don't get into concussive load and just getting the volume of the kilometres up. So, and that's why we embarked on it, you know, and we got a lot of conjecture, a lot of criticism, because whether it's jealousy, it's, I don't know what it is. I mean, you got to get conjecture with any new kind of innovation.
First one through the wall always gets bloody.
That's a really good point, yeah. And I think what happens, and that was inconsequential, because we believed it had an effect, the players believed it had an effect. You know, and the thing is that we had strategies from a financial point of view that support us, and we brought corporates along. It was, you know, people touted it was, you know, 300,000. That was rubbish, you know, it didn't cost us anywhere near that. You know, it was way less than that. It was, you know, under $150,000 when we first did it. So clubs go to Gold Coast, they go to places for heat training, which I kind of laugh. Yeah. I think training in Melbourne, that's where heat training is. And I like heat training, I think it's great. But I was focused on altitude training because I saw the benefits of our swimmers. So unequivocally, I knew that it would have a positive influence. We're talking 2 or 3%, you know, up to 5%. But in elite sport, you take it.
Yeah.
You take 3%.
Yep.
And I think not just from the physiological point of view, but also from the psychological point of view, which it's very, very hard to measure. But once people believe that it has a positive influence, then that has a carryover effect to performance as well. So that's why we embarked on it, and our players gravitated to it. They felt the benefits. We saw significant benefits from our pre and post testing. We did some research as well. We saw some benefits there as well. That helped quantify and justify our reason. And we didn't need to justify it to the external community. That's not what's in our place. And we didn't present our information really because we don't need to do that. We wanted to have a competitive advantage. Yep. Every year that we went to Aldridge, we made the finals.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's interesting. Like, yeah, I think I'm a massive, passionate athletics fan. Athletes known for decades, since the 60s, yes, since the Kenyans started crawling out of Africa, dominating the world. And then, Falls Creek, you go up there now and you've got 300 runners every time. Just the best guys in Australia running up there. It just makes sense. Obviously, it's proven scientifically. It's proven the environment, like you said, getting the whole team together. It just makes sense. And at the time, you look back now and you think, why were you guys even...
Yeah. Well, doesn't Mo Farah... Salazar is his coach, but he's based at Park City in Utah.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think he spends time, in East Africa even as well. Yeah. And
and he's not too shabby, is he? Is right?
He's okay. It's just like, well, Craig Mottram, he lives up Falls Creek, basically. Yeah. Like, and then they go across and they spend time, I think... off to Colorado. I had Benita Willis on this podcast, actually, and she basically lived in Colorado, I think, for a number of years there. And she's the best. She holds every record from 2000 to a marathon. So,
well, there you go.
There you go. And I just think AFL, obviously, with the endurance aspects of it, it's got to have the benefit.
Look, and I think what it does is by just living there is enough to create some positive influences on our physiology. So I think that in itself, I mean, if you're an athlete, well, going for 14, 15 days is enough to create a change in hemoglobin mass.
Yep.
So I think, well, look, it's a no-brainer, really. It's not difficult to do. It's easy enough to do. As you can go to Falls Creek. It's quite not as high as Flagstaff, 2,200, but you still get some benefits. You start to desaturate and you get some positive influences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I remember it was a few years ago when Dane Swan did it. Did you actually go with him at the time? Middle of season.
Yeah, that's when he won the Brownlow.
Right.
So we took them. They missed one game, and they were obviously Colin had a great year, 2011. I think only lost two home and away games, but he came home with wind in his sail, and he was just flying.
Mm. And I think he voted basically every game from there on out. But I think it's a no-brainer these days for L2 training.
Yeah, well, some clubs are totally opposed to it, and it's not for every club. And I do believe some. You need to go to really understand it. It's a real complex. It's multifactorial. Some of the benefits, and not everyone does respond. Not everyone does respond well to altitude. And if you don't get it right, it can have a very catabolic effect. They have a negative effect on your fitness. So, it's really. I've been to probably close to 20 altitude training camps now. And it takes time to become experienced. Yeah. So if you've got someone who's taken and never experienced it, they get it wrong, it could have a detrimental effect on the team or on an individual.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. My experience sort of more in the runners again, I'm just bringing back to those guys. Those guys have their own real formula that they go through when they come down from altitude to sea level. I think a lot of them know their bodies and they have a certain amount of time, and it varies between athletes, but it is a definitely thing you've got to sort of tweak to get right and then produce your best performances when you're down back at sea level. But I want to carry on, actually, talk some about the mentors you had sort of coming up through football, obviously, when you played at Richmond, and going up through 90s into North Melbourne, working through there. Were there any key people that you had? And
Look, it's interesting. Probably at the time when I was at Richmond, I wasn't a great footballer. I mean, I only got to play two games. But, look, you didn't really speak to the coaches. You were just kind of just told what to do. I would have been better to be born, say, 15 years later. I come from a kind of like an athletic background, really, and I loved sport, athletics, and football, and I was highly kind of committed. But I'd have to say my family was probably were very strong mentors. I had very supportive parents, very encouraging parents. So that made a lot easier for me as well. But also I had some really good junior coaches too. So I was fortunate to have those people in my life, and obviously, my wife's probably the best probably support that I've had. But when I was at university doing post-grad stuff, I had some very supportive people there that gave me a lot of belief and, guided me, you know, too, when I was doing my PhD. So I was very fortunate to have those people there too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it is key to having those sort of people throughout your life as you go along, and then, you know, sort of being there, done that sort of type situation, which is nice and helps, I think, I guess, sort of, you know, hacks the performance in a way. It gets you there quicker than what you would by yourself.
Oh, no doubt, James. You know, I think that's one of the things. We look at wonderful athletes in the world, you know, and we think they've done it by themselves. Well, they haven't. There's a whole network of people that have supported them. You know, we look at Usain Bolt. I'm sure there's a whole host of coaches and family that have supported him, you know. And that's it takes a team. So I think for any, you know, aspiring kind of young athlete, or anyone who wants to achieve, you need to find the right people around you that's gonna nurture you and gonna develop you. I think that's really important, you know, that you're gonna get some naysayers. Oh, you, James, you can't achieve that. Well, you get ones who do believe in you and that do support you and guide you. We need mentors, and you know, and those mentors have mentors, and those mentors have mentors. And I think that's really important. We need to identify our team, and whether you're an athlete or whether you're, you know, just Harry off the tram, you know. People need mentors and need that wise counsel around them.
And having those key people just to help them with those decisions and again giving them those awareness and that feedback right back to what we're talking about with teams, which is key. So
of course. That's really important. I think that in those formative years you need those people that can kind of see that potential, you know, and Mick Malthus, he talks about everyone's got the X factor. Some people just don't know it yet. You know, we've got to find that X factor and if other people see that in you, they can really kind of develop that in you as well.
Yeah, and really sort of unlock that sort of talent, I guess, you have.
Yeah, that's it. It's unlocking it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And some people can really unlock it. They can really get that. They see something in you, and that person really see that in me? You know, and before you know it, you're actually doing it.
I guess you were seeing it countless times.
Oh, you do see that, and all of a sudden, gee, that person, now they see it. Now they're off and going. They've, you know, they're becoming really quite successful at what they're doing. Yeah.
Got a few more questions for you. I sort of shot you through an email with a couple of ideas. What sort of documentaries would you might recommend some listeners to get a hold of and have a watch of? You think that would be useful in performance space, in, you know, maybe nutrition or anything along those sort of lines?
Gee, that's a good question, James. What documentaries?
Or even sporting documentaries that you thought were very inspiring and empowering type.
I like Into Thin Air. That's you know, the book Into Thin Air.
I haven't read that one.
Yeah, 96. That one. Yeah, that's really interesting. That was it might have been that was pretty interesting. I like Ernest Shackleton's. That's amazing. That is amazing.
I've read that book. There's a movie about that one.
Yeah,
isn't there?
His boat was called Endurance, which is so fitting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, that what's the basic story there? I've read the book. He basically is caught in trying to walk across
the Antarctic, and a guy just died recently, unfortunately, who tried to replicate that same trek. And what he does, he goes off and he leaves him there, but he comes back and he's got this really small boat, and he doesn't give up on him. His leadership is outstanding, really.
And this went on for months. I think it was like a year and a half, wasn't it? I was stuck. Like,
it's nearly 100 years ago.
Yeah, I know. If anyone can get the chance, either watch. I'll go watch the movie, but I've read the book. Definitely read the book. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I think, I like reading, and I think there's a lot of wonderful stories. I like the book Kokoda. That's pretty impressive, really. You know, when you think of, you know, the adversity that those young guys were confronted with in that 39th Division, almost the only ones. But that's a pretty impressive book as well.
Yeah, is there other books that you recommend listeners need to check out?
What's something else that there's so many books I've read that have been, you know, kind of quite inspiring. I'm just trying to think which you've got at the moment. Let me think about that one.
Obviously, your own book you wrote with Mick was really, just like I said earlier, that we touched on, which has got some great principles and that to live by through there.
Well, it was really interesting. It was mainly a book that we just wanted to do for our family, and I thought that we had so many kind of stories to share, and, you know, it was so enlightening to be involved in the whole process, because it doesn't just take two people to write a book. You know, you're getting stories from other people, you've got editors, your family read and they give you input as well. It was a lot of fun being involved with it, and I think it's one of those books you can pick up from any chapter and read from, you know, you can go from back chapter forward, really. We really basically wanted to target, you know, say managers, parents, coaches, athletes, you know, that, and it's really a life a life book, really, as a resource, because it's about kind of adversity and challenges we're kind of confronted with on a daily basis. And the thing is that we're just two normal people, and the athletes are just normal people as well, really. And they've just gone through their challenges and what worked well for them. So it's just really sharing those experiences. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed that whole process. It really kind of, we knocked it over within a period of 5 months.
And wow, yeah, 5 months, that's
yeah,
quick.
Yeah. So we knew the stories, you know, and it's easy to write about stories you've been involved with, you know. So once we put a plan together, we went and we got it going, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a recommended read. I'm not quite finished yet, but I will be shortly.
Good on you, James.
Definitely. What advice would you give to your 30-year-old self in terms of just going forward and sort of, you know, principles to live by that you might tell yourself?
I think one of the things that I go by, I think you've got to give thanks and live the moment. I think you really need to live the moment. That's really, really important. I think you need to keep kind of nurturing your relationships around you. I think you need to keep working on your health. I think, and also too, you've got to have a purpose. I think you need to really have a purpose. I think it's really important. It keeps us motivated. Look, you're going to have setbacks along the way, and that's unfortunate. But we have a choice of how we deal with that. And I think that's one of the things I've learned. And obviously, you know, losing my son 6 years ago, that was a tragedy for the family. But also too, it taught us that okay, we have to move on, and we've got to be positive with our life and make the most of it as well. We have a responsibility to life and to each other. And I think if anything, we grew a lot from that. As a family, we become a lot closer, and we realise that let's live the moment. We're still entitled to enjoy ourselves and have fun, and that's what we're doing. So it doesn't mean we don't have days we don't miss and we feel sad, but we just keep pushing forward. And I think the thing is that we're like, okay, let's have a crack at it. There's nothing to lose. There will be other setbacks in our life, but we keep working on those kind of principles. We'll have a meaningful life.
Yeah, for sure. And I believe you started a foundation, is that correct?
Yeah, it's called the Nick Foundation. Two of my mates that I played football with, we thought, let's get some stories out there to help families and parents and our youth. And that's been going for over 6 years now. And
fantastic.
It's really, and it's not a massive foundation, but we get out there and to schools, and we run a kind of performing arts kind of group as well. So it's very humbling. It's our youth drive it, really. It's been great, and you get so much energy from them anyway. So it's good to be part of.
Yeah, for sure. Just a final couple of questions. If I could give you a billboard and you could put anything on it and put it anywhere in the world, what would it say and where would you put it?
That would be interesting. anywhere in the world. I think that... I think what I'd say, and this is, look, I don't want to try to become an evangelist, give thanks. I think it's one of the things, and I think in an Australian too. I think that, we won the lottery, really, living in Australia. I think what we've got and the opportunities and potential that we have here is unbelievable. Yeah. I think that we're so fortunate, and I think that unfortunately some of the other places in the world just don't have. We live in a peaceful country. We've got a lot of opportunity, and I really give thanks for that. I think I'm so lucky, to where I live. So, yeah, I would say give thanks. Unfortunately, some people in other places of the world don't have that opportunity, but we do have opportunity and possibilities, and which is great for us.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect one, because it's definitely something I preach with guys too, is to, just know what you're sort of grateful for and do those routines. My own personal routine each morning, when I go for a run or something, you have the moment and say two or three things you're sort of grateful for, and then on with your day. And I think being grateful for what you have is just so incredible to your whole overall well-being.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, unfortunately, you see with an elite sport, and it happens, and because there is, they can have a sense of self-entitlement. And that's not a nice thing. So you've got to keep them grounded. You have a lot of sort of sycophants, patting them on the back, and that's not healthy for them as well. You've got to keep them grounded, treat them like any other person. I think that with respect unconditionally, you've got to give them your kind of your love and support to them, but you've got to keep them grounded, because once they get that sense of self-entitlement, that's not a healthy thing, you know. They have to be a little bit self-centered at times because they're so focused on that, but that's a little bit unnatural as well, you know. So it's getting that balance right. It's not an easy formula to get right, but because you can lose that equilibrium quite easily. You've got so many people kind of, you know, saying you do this, and you're so, you know, that's and how great you are. That's why you need your family around you to keep yourself.
Well, this whole conversation is just beautifully going around with the whole mentors and talking about feedback, and it's just critical. So everything's
critical.
Everything's just sort of lining up nicely.
Yeah. And really, because they come and go. You know, athletes come and go, and it evaporates just like overnight. You know, you like to think they picked up some skills along the way, then they can start to transfer into the normal daily life. You know, and hopefully then they can impart some of those skills on other people too. You know, there's a kind of a legacy. So work ethic, discipline, you know, work in a team environment, those things are really important, you know, that they'll put them in good stead for later in life, because they'd be quite young when they finish. You'll be 24 or 25.
Yep.
And they've still got a lot of life to live.
Yeah, exactly right. What's an average day look like for you now, David? What's your average day plan set out?
Well, I get up reasonably early, and I'm doing some exercise pretty quickly in the morning, and on the bike or out walking, but
What time do you get up by usually? What time's
alarm? I try to get up before 6:30. Yep. You know, well, I suppose I'm not, that's too early, but I'm trying to, you know, I'm up early getting stuff going, and then got my task ahead, so I'm organised as far as, you know, from emailing, meeting clients and so on now. I'm on a couple of boards as well, so that keeps me reasonably busy too. So, you know, that's, you're always, you know, attending meetings there, but I have a pretty heavy schedule, but also too, I'm allowing time and day to unwind as well. You know, we get pretty busy, but I'm a big believer, you need to declutter. You know, that's really important. Have your time where you unwind as well.
I'm just interested, I'm curious about your morning routine. Do you keep a similar routine each day, or does it vary a lot? Or?
No, I have to exercise every day. Yep. And as I've always done, well, pretty much the last, you know, 30 years, unless I've been sick or whatever it may be, but I try to do exercise every day. So I try to do it in the morning, and I might do something in the afternoon. So I keep the regular kind of routine and doing it. If I don't do it, I get a little bit, you know, kind of... unbalanced.
Yeah, I'm totally the same.
So I've got to do something every day. And look, I don't necessarily kind of go out and you know, flog myself, but some days you do that, and some days you have your, you know, hard days and you have your easy days. You know, so it's, you know, I'm not achieving any kind of marathons or like that, but I like to kind of extend myself and take myself out of the comfort zone. I'm always cautious of not being too comfortable all the time. That's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, and the different exercises you do. Do you mention cycling?
I surf, and you know, I do weights regularly. I do a lot of hiking, which I love. Have occasional swim now and then. I should do a bit more yoga, but I do a little bit of stretching at home. But the main one is cycling, surfing, and weights.
Yeah. Well, I just mentioned I just started with the yoga, so definitely seen the benefits within just a few sessions. I'm going to continue.
Get in the Bikram yoga, James. You'd I've done that a few times. That's pretty tough.
Is it? Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, you can be really disciplined to do that. So, I think the first time I had to go at doing Bikram yoga, my daughter took me, didn't know anything about it. Seriously, after 30 minutes, and they went out screaming. But you know, it's pretty tough.
I can see the benefits. I might have to try the Bikram, but we'll see. I might just stick with my
get a good
by
up.
Myself and doing that. But that's fine. But I really want to just finish up here and really thank you for coming on and spending your time with us.
No, I've enjoyed it.
I'm sure the people out there are going to really get a lot out of this. Hopefully, even like I said, just a couple of things here and there can really make a big difference. So
good on you, James.
I appreciate that for a couple.
No, you're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
No worries, we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, you're going to be
great. So there you have it, folks. Episode 45 with David Butterfin. That guy is an absolute amazing individual, an amazing person, and I feel so blessed and grateful for him to be on the show. I'm sure you guys learned incredible amounts in that hour or so, and through David's whole life basically spent in high performance, particularly with athletes, but in life in general. And I think you, as you would have just discovered, he is really got some great advice for all of us to help us take our games to the next level, take our lives mentally, emotionally, physically, all overall well-being up a notch. And that's what we're all trying to do here with this podcast, or what I do. And he's just really helped us with that, I think. And I'm sure you guys definitely agree with me on that one. So, guys, thank you very much. The show notes for this is going to be on eliteteamleadership.com.au/45. This is going to have links to David's website and company website there with Mick Mouldhouse. It's also going to have links to his Twitter account, and check him out there with his stuff. Also, if you guys can subscribe to this podcast, and main thing, give us a 5-star rating about this. If you loved it, that would be fantastic. It really helps us here continue with this each week. A lot of work goes into this, and we want to continue it. So if you can help us out, show your support by giving us a great rating, and helps us continue that with some more incredible guests, some incredible content, information for you guys, help you lift your lives up to the next level, whether it be in sport as an athlete, whether you're in business, whether just in life in general. It's just for you here. And we just reached, I think last time I count, last week was 39 countries actually. So wherever you are in the world right now, listen to this. Thank you so much for being here, all the way through North America, Europe, through the Middle East and Asia. So many incredible lists, obviously here in Australia as well. You're just really incredible people. I love that you're here. I love that you're really taking your game to the next level. That's all it's about. It's about constantly improving and striving for that bit extra. And each guest each week is tailored to help you in different aspects of your life. And David's episode this week, I think, has done just that. And I really appreciate that you're here. So thank you very much. Get stuck into this week. If you can apply, main thing is taking action and taking that step and making those choices from what you've just learned. Get a couple into your life, guys, and you'll see the compounding interest, I can guarantee, over time if you make them just a general life way of living. So thank you for being here, and we will see you with another amazing guest. I've got a huge guest coming on soon next week, and coming up in the weeks after as well, which you guys are going to love. So keep an eye out for that, but we'll speak to you soon.